Hey, witches.
Welcome to The Lion,
The Witch,
and the podcast. We are two mystic Leos discussing spirituality and human condition in the post-pandemic world.
So hop in, witches, for going hexing.
Happy Passover.
Happy Passover.
Thank you. Do you like my necklace I'm wearing?
It's gorgeous. Mm. I love your Star of David. It's so pretty.
I wonder who got it for me.
I don't know. Maybe someone's
room. Oh my God. Anyway, happy Passover. Happy full moon. Oh my God. We're recording it on the full moon.
Oh my
damn.
God.
Wow.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell the people about your Passover and what you ate? Because I want to hear more about
that. Oh my God. So we went to a friend's and we had this beautiful Passover dinner. It was really, really lovely. Usually we spend it with my family, but hey, friends are family. Like, friends are fucking family. And we ordered in from this amazing deli. Very like Jewish kosher deli. Mm-hmm. And we had brisket, we had chicken, we had two types of matzah kugel, or we had a matzah kugel, a potato kugel. We did have three kinds of matzah. We had, oh my God, the chicken, we had some haroset, we had, oh my God, this other thing that I had no clue, but it was a bunch of like fruits and veggies. I think they're like dates or maybe prunes. If anyone knows, and I don't know what it's called, I'm completely forgetting. I apologize. Oh my God, I'm trying to think what else we had. Dude, it was so much food. We had veggies. I just ate, honestly, the matzah kugel the whole time.
So good.
It's so good. It was very cinnamon and it was kind of like a dessert, but kugel, you can have for dinner, you can have for breakfast, you can have for dessert, you can have matzah, honestly, whenever you fucking want. So that was so good. And for dessert, we had, oh my God, we had a cake, we had some macaroons, like, so fucking good. We had, I don't remember, but I had such a stomach ache and my stomach is so bloated, but you know what? It's worth it for matzah. Matzah makes you constipated. Matzah makes you bloated, but matzah's worth it. It's true.
I think I've had matzah once and I definitely want to experience that more. So thank you.
Dude,
for being an inspiration there.
Dude, go get some matzah, have it for breakfast, make like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with matzah. Ooh. Oh my God. Yes, it's so good. Matzah braai is really fucking good. It was just really wonderful that we all got together and we talked about just life and everything. And
that's what Passover is about, right?
That's what every Jewish holiday is about. Just talking and gathering and having good food. Anyway, enough about me. I feel like I'm talking a lot. How are you?
No, I'm good. We are finally seeing signs of spring here, which make me so happy. The forsythia is blooming. It's this beautiful magnetic neon yellow. And like after so long here of just like everything being brown and dead, like finally things are blooming. I think that's a good time to discuss our new addition to the Lunar Leos lineup here.
It's so good. Everyone, you know what's happening. A new ritual oil is coming out and we are so fucking excited for this one. I literally have it right next to me and I'm just like sniffing it like no other. It is called the Empress.
Yes.
And
could you just imagine? Like that's the vibe. It's the Empress vibe. You know, it's that fertile, beautiful, blooming earth, just spring vibes, high spring vibe. It's like rebirth time.
And emotional stability, honestly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The oil is intended for emotional stability and balance. It has emotionally stabilizing herbs in it that are usually used for that intention. It smells like you just cracked open an orange while you're sitting in like a field of wildflowers. Like you're on a picnic, a spring picnic. That's what it smells like to me.
Fuck. It smells so good and it works. It really does work. It calms you down so much. And honestly, like sniff it when you're having a good cry. It'll probably bring out more things.
Yeah, fine. Why the fuck not? Because sometimes in order to reach stability, you need to like get your emotions out on the table. You need to be transparent with how you're feeling, and crying is a great way to like find balance after a good cry. Like I always feel a lot more balanced once I like get all that out. It's cathartic.
Did I just do that? Did I just cry?
It's I think okay. I just cried. It's the full moon.
It's okay. Yes. And also I've been having a lot of teeth problems. So like it fucking sucks, but it's okay because the Empress will cure it all.
Truly, truly. Yeah, the Empress is coming out soon. It will be launching on April 18th. So as they say, watch this space.
Yes. You know where to sign up on like the Instagram and the TikTok and the email. Like, please sign up on our email list because like you get discount codes, guys.
At every like every single launch, we send out a discount code. Like you're gonna get money off every single time.
Yeah. So you should do that, especially because we have the bath soaks, we have the sprays, we have Empress oil, like the Practical Magic oils are still out there, like, and all of our old babies. Like we got all of them. The Green Man and Gaia, and like more things are gonna be, you know, yes. we got a lot of things. Yes. And speaking, no, that's not a good segue. How do I segue into this?
A time of rebirth.
Okay, perfect. That's a perfect way to segue. Yeah. Sean, lead us in with the segue.
Yeah. So the segue, of course, so take a shot. You have spirits or libations next to you. But when I think of rebirth, when I think of like just spring majesty and actually, honestly, Empress energy, I think of the goddess Freya. I don't know. She just like, she feels like warm spring growth. Like she feels like fresh fruit, you know, and honey and just like ever flowing emotions. I don't know. That's how I feel when I think of her.
I agree. And it's a goddess that you really like don't hear too much about, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're going to go through in this episode is really interesting. What we found, this is a very, like, obviously she's a Norse goddess. A lot of the Norse texts are very complex, hard to read. So I feel like a lot of the details are missed when it comes to Freya. But I hope that everyone will like what we found, because I look at her completely different way after I've found out all of these things about her. So I'm excited about that.
I love that. Let's go in with the resources.
Cool. So resources for today: the Poetic Edda, the Prose Edda by Snorri Sturluson. Just a note on the Poetic Edda, we're not 100% sure who compiled that, so I'm just gonna go with no author on that, but if someone else has better information, please let us know. The Inlinga Saga by Snorri Sturluson, The Divine Feminine by Annette Pierso and Israel Gonzalez, Encyclopedia of Spirits by Judica Illis, Freya, Great Goddess of the North by Britt Mary Nastrom, and The Symbolism of the Linden Tree from the Journal of Horticulture, Forestry, and Biotechnology.
All right. So who is Freya? Freya is known as the most renowned goddess within Norse mythology, according to Annette Pierso and Israel Gonzalez, and the most beautiful of the Norse spirits, according to Judica Illis. Illis says that she embodies the essence of passion, fire, and glory, and has dominion over love, magic, witchcraft, warcraft, death, and in some writings, fertility. However, the sources here conflict often and heavily. Seemingly, Freya could also represent balance, being aligned with both death and life, beauty and warfare. Freya was born among the Vanir, which is the group of Norse gods known for their connections to earth and magic. She was the daughter of the sea god Njord, an unknown mother, possibly the goddess Nirthis. There isn't clear information on Freya's mother, and the Poetic Edda, the poem of Norse mythology, has suggested that Freya was simply created by her father alone, while the Ynglinga sagas describes Freya's mother as her father's sister. She is also sister to Freyr, or Frey, the god of happiness, peace, sun, and rain. Judica Illa says that Freya was no obscure goddess, but beloved and worshipped over a vast European territory, including Scandinavia, Iceland, Greenland, the Germanic lands, Holland, and Anglo-Saxon Britain. No spirit annoyed Christian authorities more than Freya. Constant condemnation kept Freya from fading into obscurity.
Freya was adeptly attuned in the magical arts and freely shared this knowledge with the gods and goddesses of Asgard, the realm of the reigning Aesir gods, deities of war and sky, among whom was Odin, the All-Father and King. Freya was among many of the Vanir who aligned themselves with the Aesir, and quickly became a dominating force in this realm once the war between the two races of gods ended. She would shift her form and lead the war maiden Valkyries into battle, where she would lay claim to half the dead who are brought to dwell in her beautiful place, Folkvang, where love songs play continuously. Freya was heavily associated with magic, especially divination, called Sedir, or magic sight, in the source material. Judica Illa says that Freya was denounced as the queen of the witches. Women who venerated her were branded witches. And of course, Freya's rites and traditions did encourage magical practice, mediumship, and female autonomy, with Freya herself as the role model, behavior the Christian regime considered abhorrent and sinful. Freya possessed a feather cloak that allowed the goddess to fly at any time. And she also traveled in a chariot pulled by two gray cats, or atop her golden bristled boar, Hildisvini, the battle swine. A word that comes to mind when discussing Freya is epic, as she is truly an exceptionally interesting and metamorphic deity.
All right, next is the mythology of Freya. Among the wide, varied, and dense sources that mention Freya, Britt Mary Nastrom, in her book, Freya, the Great Goddess of the North, approaches them in a way that is both digestible and comprehensible. The Poetic Edda, Nastrom says, is a collection of the old songs about gods and heroes, previously handed down through oral tradition or written down in Snorri Sturluson's time, potentially by an Icelandic historian called Sæmundur. Snorri Sturluson is a historian of the 13th century to whom the collection and organization of the myth is largely attributed in the Prose Edda, despite Sturluson's Christianization of the myths, according to Nastrom. It's important to understand that the two Eddas are different, and Sturluson takes many creative liberties with his Edda. Both Eddas contain stories about gods and heroes and about the beginning and end of the world, stories in which we may discern motives belonging to ages long gone and bearing witness to the common culture inheritance within the Indo-European mythical framework. Nastrom says that a characterization of Freya must be based on the available Old Norse literary sources, which convey the image of a multi-faced deity whose cultic realms extend far beyond the fertility aspect.
In the Ingalinga Saga by Snorri Sturluson, a work which deals with the arrival of the Norse gods to Scandinavia, Freya's origin story is presented, along with her ties to magic. In this saga, we get an explanation of the war between the Vanar and the Aesir gods, a destructive and bloody conflict that left the land in ruin. The gods settled upon a truce, and as was custom at this time, exchanged hostages on both sides. And of the Vanir, Freya and her brother Frey, and their father Njord, came to live with the gods of Asland. Freya is identified in the text as presiding over sacrificial rituals, and the original teacher of the magical art of Sedir to the Aesir. Sedir is believed to be a form of magic practiced in the late Scandinavian Iron Age that is associated with the telling and shaping of the future. And apologies if I mispronounce that. Sedir has been analyzed by scholars to have been used to describe divination in earlier literature, but in later writings, it comes to mean evil magic or sorcery, which, like much of the Nordic myths, could have been theoretically taken out of context by Christian writers and used as a device to impose anti-Christian rhetoric onto Freya's stories, therefore making them enemies to Christians. Nastrom begins her discussion of Freya's mythology close to home, quite literally, by discussing Freya's palace. In the Poetic, Freya's halls are called Folkvangar, the field of the warriors. In the prose, they are called Sesruminar, or holding many seats. Freya distributes these many seats to the fallen warriors she chooses on the battlefield. Freya's halls are distinguishable from Valhalla, Odin's halls, and the realm of the goddess of death, Hel, in Helheim. Freya, as an offer of goodwill among the Vanir from the Aesir, was awarded priority in her choice of fallen souls by Odin. Sturluson says that whenever Freya rode into battle, she owned half the fallen. In the search for Thor's hammer, Thor took Freya's form in order to be accepted by the giants, who welcomed Freya warmly into their world. In another poem, Loki degrades Freya by stating that she not only has slept with all of the gods, but that she is a witch filled with all kinds of evil. Freya quickly and with a sharp tongue puts him in his place, suggesting that she is a vision of fidelity, which is well known by the gods, especially Frigg, the goddess of marriage and motherhood. However, this is challenged by other poems. Freya is most famously associated with love poetry, according to Sturluson, that, quote, it is good to invoke her about love affairs, and noble women are called the Freyjur, in honor of her. When her husband Odur left her, she wept tears of red gold, which could have meant amber. In the source text, gold is referred to as the shower of Freya's eyes, which could suggest the element's origin story in Old Norse.
Freya is often associated with gold, if not from her eyes and around her neck. I love that. Freya's famous necklace is a gold adornment called Brisingamen or Brising, borrowed and stolen by many in both the Eddas. In the Flateyjarbók, a medieval Icelandic manuscript, which contains stories of many Christian kings and was dated 200 to 300 years later than the Eddas, Freya's celebrated fidelity is challenged in an extremely confusing narration on how she acquired her necklace. Interestingly, it connects the story of Loki's trash talk in what we touched upon earlier, and one cannot ignore that this manuscript was penned during a time of Christian Reformation, and Freya's character unsurprisingly takes a hit. In brief, Freya is characterized in this story as Odin's mistress, interested in a golden adornment forged by four dwarves. She pays them by sleeping with them, according to the story, and is found out by Loki, who sells her out to Odin and steals the necklace as she sleeps. Odin uses this blackmail to his advantage and demands that Freya start a war between two kings in order to get her necklace back, which she does. In later literature, this concept of Freya as an overly sexual character is continued. She was called a harlot and a whore in the Saints' Sagas, a period after the Christianization process, a time of ambivalence toward the old religion, according to Nastrom. This hostile aspect emerges as erotic qualities associated with Freya from later stories that pop up after the Eddas, like the story of her necklace, that are not based on her original associations, but are instead used as a knife in the back of the heathen mythology. Nastrom says that Christianity oscillated between regarding the native gods as lifeless idols and as malevolent demons. Freya was degraded seemingly because of her fame and notoriety in the Old Norse stories and the socio-political struggles of a newly Christianized world. One might argue that by destroying Freya, Christian ruling authorities could use her degradation as a vehicle to destroy the old religion.
Nastrom says that at an early point in modern Swedish literature, Freya became a counterpart of the Roman Venus. In some songs, 18th century sex workers were regarded as the daughters of Freya, as the goddess at some point seemed to represent lust and potency. 19th century romanticism switched gears, emphasizing not Freya's erotic qualities, but the pining goddess, crying for her husband, assuming the wings of a falcon to find him. Slowly, she begins to come back into favor through the cry of nationalism, incorporated into the Danish national anthem, which alludes to the old religion's fertility goddess, and that Denmark is the hall of Freya. Prior to this, Freya has been characterized by her unlimited eroticism, and therefore classified her as a fertility goddess instead of a complex goddess of love and balance. In the source material, Freyr is actually named as the god of fertility from his association with agriculture. So isn't that interesting that, you know, you really have to look at the first bits of material that we have on a god or a goddess and how they slowly evolve through the age, picking up, it's kind of like a ball, right? Just like a ball of goo, let's say, rolling down a mountain. And it starts off as the original goo, right? Mm-hmm. But then as it rolls, it picks up rocks, it picks up sticks, pieces of grass. It keeps rolling, rolling, rolling down this hill until it's this giant ball of not only goo, but grass and rocks and gravel and sticks, you know? It's picked up so many things throughout the ages that its former associations in the original text are almost unrecognizable. Isn't that weird?
I'm not surprised, though.
No. Okay, titles and epithets of Freyja. In Old Norse, Freyja's name was pronounced Fruja and anglicized to Freyja from Freyja. So F-R-E-Y-A from F-R-E-Y-J-A.
Hmm.
Israel Gonzalez says that various parallels seem to connect with Freyja to the Norse goddess Frigg, whose dominion over fertility and childbirth correspond with Freyja's power over love and magic. Gonzalez says that this was largely due to the spread of Christianity by Germany, which had overwhelmed the Scandinavian religions and led to the two goddesses becoming assimilated into a much less distinct entity. While the details behind these deities have come under scrutiny over the centuries, the pre- and post-Germanic writings lend enough information to the theory that Freyja and Frigg were paradoxically the same, yet separate. It is said that Freya's eventual husband was the wandering Odur, whose name was derived from the same Old Norse sources as Odin, Frigg's husband. Freyja derived from the same stem as Freyr, or Lord, says Nostrum, although phonetically close to Frigg, but the two do not originate from the same stem. Frigga is derived from the same stem as the verb Frigga, meaning to love. It is, however, possible to bridge the gap between Frigg and Freyja using the phonetic laws of the Old Norse language, where the GG and silent J in Frigg is replaced with the YYJ in Freyja.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Very deep contextual stuff right there.
Despite the different etymologies, there must have been a likeness between Frigg and Freyja, which goes back to a common origin in the Greek goddess, whose epithets were both beloved and the lady. Sturluson himself makes a distinction between the goddesses referring to Freyja as voluptuous, quite distinct from how he describes Frigg, the queen of the gods and mourning mother of Baldur. He makes assertions that Frigg is a counterpart of Juno, of Roman mythology, and Freyja, a counterpart of Venus, a device used to connect the evolution of Norse culture and the mythology city of Troy, which was a popular move to make of time.
In the Prose Edda, Sturluson says that Freyja gave herself many names when she went with unknown people to find her husband, Odar. She is called Mardol, interpreted to mean the one shining over the sea, Horn, probably derived from the flax seed, which protected against evil and was credited to giving fertility to mankind in the cultural perspective, connected with women as the seed of the woman. Then we have Gufn, the giving, alluding to the fertility aspect of the goddess, and Sir, meaning sow, which could have been a form Freyja appeared in, or another illusion of fertility. This may seem confusing because these names come from the Eddas, although Freyja was not specifically named a fertility goddess in the Eddas, only that she is curvy, attractive, and should be appealed to for love. We can draw the conclusion that because of the cultural associations with names like Horn or Flax, which align with fertility, that Freyja was assumed a fertility goddess. Further, Nastrum points out that any association not having to do with sexuality and fertility that pops up with Freyja seems to be largely ignored by scholars. The source material is so vague and fragile that it is largely up to interpretation. Sturluson calls Freyja Vanadis, which means Vanir goddess or woman of the Vanar, a title of her origin. She is also defined often by her connection to the men in her lives, mentioned as the daughter of Njord, the sister of Freyr, the wife of Odur, with the exception to a link to her daughter as Nos's mother. Freyja is also called the owner of the slain and the love goddess, and referred to as a sacrificial priestess. Another name Freyja gave herself was Gundul, while she was trying to trick the kings into fighting each other to get her necklace. In later literature, Freya is transformed into a noble but inactive lady named Trojanborg, whose reactions are far removed from the Freya we know when she becomes quick to anger, as she is categorized in some literature. In the Poetic, Freya recites a tender verse to her beloved, suggesting they marry, and is referred to as Menglu Freya. And more famously, Freya is referred to in the literature as Valfreya, her name as she rides with the Valkyries into battle to lay claim to her dead, according to Judica Illis.
That's a lot. And you know what's so interesting? I hear her more as Valfreya.
Yeah. That's a whole other personality that she takes on, because that's her battle form, right? That's Valfreya is someone I would invoke possibly during like a justice proceeding, a justice spell, someone to help me out in confrontations, things like that. When I feel stressed about things getting tough, I would invoke Valfreya. You know, it's so crazy that through the years, she was just changed and adapted to how people wanted to use her as a device, basically. And that is such a disservice to this goddess who is so interesting and amazing and powerful, you know, and the whole like sex versus love thing. Obviously, sex can be a huge part of love, but in other times it may not be, you know, it all depends on the relationship and the context. But aligning Freya simply with sex it diminishes her almost, you know, it corresponds, it takes her power that she has, this powerful entity as Valfreya, and it just makes her power almost connected to sex, which is, it's pushing her into a one dimension. She's a multi-dimensional figure.
Isn't that so relevant to
yeah
life right now?
Yeah. And just how women are categorized and treated in literature.
Literally.
So one-dimensional. And that's just not who Freya is. Look at how many names she's given. And she's given herself. You know? She has so many different personalities and aspects. It's crazy.
Magical associations of Freya. Judica Illis says that Freya weeps tears of amber and honey contains her essence. As a Nordic goddess, runes can be used to communicate with and honor Freya, especially Berkano and Ehwas. She favors soldiers, veterans, jewelers, seers, shamans, practitioners of the magical arts. Freya manifests usually as a golden, beautiful, charismatic woman, but she is a shape-shifter and can take any form. Her sacred items are the magical falcon feather cloak, enabling her to fly, and Brisingamen, the glowing necklace forged by dwarves. Gold is her sacred metal, and her sacred day is Friday. Plants said to be sacred to her are primrose, cowslip, snowdrops, or lily of the valley, daisy, mugwort, birdberry, holly, bedstraw, flax, hemp. According to the Journal of Horticulture, Forestry, and Biotechnology, in the pre-Christian Germanic mythology, the linden tree was considered a holy tree that had a great symbolic value because it was associated with Freya, the guardian of life, the goddess of fortune, fertility, love, and truth. As a legend says, the linden tree could not have been struck by the lightning because Freya was the wife of Wotan, the most important god of the Germanic pantheon. The German tribes that lived 2,000 years ago considered the linden tree a tree of peace and justice. Freya's sacred animals are cats, rabbits, boars, oxen, ladybugs, falcons, and swallows.
All right, last but certainly not least in our simple spell series is honoring Freya. Judica Illis says that offerings to Freya can include honey, mead, flowers, singing love songs for her, composing poetry. Judica Illis says that Freya will accept humble offerings, but she has a fine taste and will gladly accept lavish offerings of jewelry and perfume. Freya's devotees held dinners in her honor, offering her ale, apples, barley, and pork. It is traditional to feed stray or feral cats as an offering to Freya. Adopting some cats may get you into good graces too, provided you treat them well. We can also consider modern ways in which we might honor her historical associations and bring her into the contemporary realm. Freya was shown to be a loyal character, not only to her husband, who she wept many tears for, but to defend her own honor when she spoke up for herself. You can perform acts of self-care, invoke her if you need to come to your own defense, or when you make efforts to show your relationships more care. Freya was a goddess of battle. Invoke her in justice workings, at court proceedings, or even in arguments you'd like to win. As a goddess of beauty and love, bring her into your glamour spells, wear jewelry or perfume in her honor. Drink mugwort tea or burn the dried herb. Ask Freya to bless your divination cards or tools and work with runes to communicate with her. There are a multitude of ways to honor Freya, but I think the most important is taking the time to study the source material in which she is mentioned and deconstruct her characterizations in history. Find credible sources through which to read about her and educate yourself on how the lands from which she had come evolved through the introduction and conversion to Christianity and how the Norse culture and religion evolved over time. I think it's super important to say, yes, take a look at Freya's myths. Take a look at how she was changed over time. Do as much research as you can, but it's very hard and that's often inaccessible for a lot of people who don't have these massive archives of resources to parse through and the time to do it. You know, it's very dense, it's very difficult to traverse. So what I would say is, you know, do what research you can on her, but leave some room for her living practice, her living myths. You know, you're probably going to talk to a lot of practitioners that work with Freya or honor Freya that may disagree with what you find in your research or what you come up with as a way to work with her. You know, you might have a specific divination deck that you like that's oracle cards. Someone else might say, no, you have to work with runes if you work with Freya. No, you don't. You know, you need to respect what you find. And like we always say, as long as you're not hurting others or taking from closed practices, I think it's important to leave room and space for your own experiences with this deity because they're going to be different from everybody else. It's a lot, but Freya is really cool. And I think she deserves everyone's time and attention.
She absolutely does. And I mean, talking about like the research and all that, another kind of perfect segue on what another thing that we do want to talk about.
Yeah. So as we mentioned previously, we are starting our Patreon. Well, we're getting a little more serious about our Patreon now, and we are very much considering dropping our Patreon in May. So we have more information on that through our Instagram, through our mailing list, even on our website. We'll have more information on that. So you're definitely going to want to watch our socials. You're going to want to sign up to our mailing list because that is probably the easiest way to get into regular contact with us, essentially, to hear from us more often. We're going to be moving to Patreon as a learning resource, which means we are going to be taking a step away from the podcast. It has been such a beautiful, fun, and amazing experience to share all of this with you for so long, for 2 years. 2 years, Court. Can you believe we've been doing this for this long?
No, honestly.
Yeah, it's nuts. It feels like we just started this yesterday, but we have grown so much and we have learned so frigging much. And this community itself has changed and evolved over these past 2 years. And honestly, this is like lit up our lives doing this with you guys. It's collaboration with you guys. It's creating a community. And we want to solidify that even more by creating this Patreon and this safe space to learn and grow and evolve with us. We think it's a really good move and we are so excited to be starting into it. We do not know when we will be coming back to this, but we can say that we are going to be putting our all into that Patreon. So if you want to continue to follow us weekly, you know, and have actual connections with us, learn more with us, and get a lot of cool furry stuff, then you're going to want to follow us on Patreon. So if you loved learning with us all this time, that's where we're going. So follow us there.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we said, the Lion, the Witch, and the Podcast is still here. It's always going to be here. And it started our journey and it made us grow into Lunar Leos. Like, yeah, that's freaking amazing. And starting the Patreon, like Sean said, you're actually gonna have time with us, like actual time with us. And We want that. We want to hear from you. We want to like really know you and give you the information that you do want. Different, like Sean said, different learning. And we really hope that you join our Patreon because it's going to be really fucking exciting and really, really cool. And yeah, hit us up on the Instagram. Make sure that you are on our email list because that is where you're going to know everything. Even though a lot of people don't look at their emails, look at our emails because our emails, like we literally say everything, especially about the Empress oil that it's going to be dropping and every other product that's going to be dropping. Like we're really excited. We're really excited for our next journey. And you know where you can find us on here. You can stream all of our past episodes and this episode on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We've kind of all said everything else, but this isn't goodbye. This is like, hey, this is another step that we're going to. So we're really excited for this and we hope you are too.
Thank you so much for all of the love and support you've given us over these past 2 years. We literally could not have done this without you. We love you guys so much and we want you to come with us on this new step in our journey. So please, if you can, consider joining our Patreon. It's going to be well worth it. There's going to be a lot of content we're going to be giving you access to and you'll get more access to us as well. So join the community, please.
Yeah, join the Lunar Leos.
Yes, join the Lunar Leos community. It is going to be exclusive and fun and a safe, great space.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be like a garden that we're growing together and planting together. We're watering each other, you know? And speaking of that, drink your water. We love you so much.
We love you guys. Seriously, so, so much. And we will talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.